we present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Manchester Evening News, read by Peter Donaldson.
Planning permission was given for a new Warrington church, so long as it didn't open on Sundays.
Thanks to Ted Shepherd of Thelwall for sending in that. Let's meet the teams now. Will you welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Jeremy Hardy. Facing them on my left, and Alan Corran and a newcomer to the news quiz, David Aranovich of The Independent. And before we start round one, here's a cutting from the Times.
Lavatories top the agenda in the Sergeant-at-Arms office at Westminster, where the huge influx of female MPs will place unusual demands on the facilities at the House of Commons. Newcomers will have to hang on until the summer recess.
Thanks to Jill Selwood of Chichester for spotting that. Francis, what was blared out in the Queen's English?
I haven't the faintest idea.
Right.
This must be the new Prime Minister. He persuaded the Queen to get on message and deliver a speech on his behalf. And there's a lot of the usual fandango, silver stick in waiting, presented the cap of maintenance to the royal barge master, and that sort of nonsense. And I saw Mandelson being interviewed while all this fandango was going on, saying, "Isn't it marvellous, the grand old traditions of this country?" While the Queen was delivering a speech saying, "We intend to shake up Parliament, all these frightfully outmoded procedures." But that is not going to go. Everything else is going to go. They're going to have a sort of horseshoe-shaped House of Commons. They're going to do away with the old ideas of adversarial politics. It's all going to be one big happy family, and they won't call each other my honourable friend anymore because they're not honourable, perhaps. I don't know.
I think she should have to learn the speech, though. It doesn't look very good, her reading the whole thing out with glasses. Or she could have cards or something. No. But I'm waiting for the abolition of the monarchy when she has to make the announcement.
My government has decided it's the chat show circuit for me.
Yes, the cap of maintenance is great. It only ever comes out, doesn't it, on the straight opening of Parliament. There's a chap who has to carry the cap of maintenance. Queen Juliana has the Dutch cap of maintenance. The question referred to the Queen's speech, a momentous occasion, the first ever from a Labour government seen in colour. The new Prime Minister's proposals include giving the National Lottery to a non-profit organisation, which means that the weekly draw will be run by Eurotunnel. Despite Labour's shift to informality, there was no real let-up in the pomp of the occasion, as the doors of Parliament were slammed shut in the face of a man in black silk stockings demanding entry. The court usher called out the official, time-honoured response, "Bugger off, Portillo." Jeremy, who was rumoured to have found Widdicombe fair?
Yeah. Anne Widdicombe has suddenly become very lovable to the nation. Hitherto, one had associated her with women prisoners giving birth in chains, which is a story that broke a couple of years ago, and lots of women in Hampstead tried to book for it, assuming it was a new technique from France. Now she's suddenly very popular because she's having a go at Michael Howard. Because 2 weeks ago, the Tories lost the election. Praise be. And they're ripping each other apart. And they're all trying to decide who should now lead them. And one of the candidates is Howard. This all started with rumours and sources. And it was all friends of Widdicombe and friends of Howard, which is obviously nonsense because neither of them have any friends. But she suddenly announced that there's something of the night in Michael Howard. And his camp said, "That's nonsense, he's unstoppable, apart from if you use a silver bullet or a stake through the heart."
Vision of the chocolates being delivered by Anne Widdicombe to Lewis, who I think of as something out of Morse. But it was like that milk tray thing. You saw this large woman in a cat suit in the doorway of a Dakota. Time for Leo Jen to shove her out over Wimbledon, wherever it was, coming down with a box of milk tray at the head of the prison service. Very strange story. I rather wish we'd elected all these people in. They're immensely sinister. It's an entire Hammer film, the Conservatives.
David, who won't be swearing in the office?
The members of Sinn Féin, the Sinn Féin MPs won't be swearing, will they? They apparently, because they won't take the oath of office, or at least they won't take it with their fingers crossed, they're not going to be allowed to use the facilities of the House, which means that if Gerry Adams or Martin McGuinness finds themselves caught short in Whitehall, they won't be able to come in and use the loos, the House of Commons. Now, this is a good thing, because you can imagine being a rather nervous Conservative MP, and you're standing there at the stall, and you look to the person next to you, and the person says, "Hi, I'm Gerry Adams. Look, I'm human after all." Not very disconcerting. So the Speaker has decided that they won't be allowed to use anything of the House of Commons until they take the oath properly.
But the logic of it is extraordinary, because it's been partly done for security reasons, I think. But I should have thought, if I were an MP, I'd very much like to have Gerry Adams and Martin McGuinness on the premises, even if it meant that they used the photocopier occasionally and perhaps pinched a few stamps and stole something from the coffee machine. Because it means that you're entirely safe. Nobody's going to blow up the House of Commons as long as they're in it. logic does not apply in these cases. It's more important that they should be kept away from using the franking machine, because that's going to bring them to the negotiating table.
Exactly right. Speaker of the House Betty Boothroyd announced that Sinn Féin MPs Martin McGuinness and Gerry Adams would not be allowed to set up office in Parliament if they refused to swear allegiance. She decided to change the rules after receiving a coded phone warning to say they were coming. Chief Security Officer's objection was his worry about the arrival of suspect packages, but Adams said he'd never even met Neil Hamilton. Alan, listen to this. Alan, who's decided that mixing their drinks is good for them?
That was a samba. In the days when I was dancing the samba, even before I had my first Alco Pop, Guinness was good for you. They used to have an exotic bird with a big beak, rather like the artist formerly known as Edwina Curry. Exotic bird with a big beak on posters, and it said, "Guinness is good for you, think what toucan do." And the toucan was really, really very nice, until they all turned very nasty. And they realised that, think what toucan do, they've just merged with, one of them has eaten the other, we won't discover for a bit, that's the way it is in the city, they've merged with Grand Metropolitan to make the biggest organisation in the world that manufactures addictive drugs. it's the biggest booze empire there is. It's Johnny Walker and it's Burger King and it's Guinness and... It's upset a number of people, particularly Ernest Saunders, because he hasn't got his finger in the pie this time. He forgot, for some reason, a brief recurrence of Alzheimer's. He didn't have his feet under the table, but it's the big booze merger.
Yes, exactly right. It's the planned £24 billion merger between Grand Metropolitan and Guinness. As a result, between them, they'll have the largest number of spirit brand names outside Princess Margaret's cocktail cabinet. Yeah, scores at the end of round one are Francis and Jeremy 4, Alan and David 4 points. Francis, which one does the flock think shouldn't be number one?
The flock. Jeremy here is looking very alert.
Yes, we know this.
The sheep reference?
Sheep.
Yes.
It's not the sheep that got the grant from the Arts Council.
No.
No, it's not.
They did, you know. Did you see it?
Don't waffle.
It's true. Northumbrian sheep farmer has been given £300,000 by the Arts Council of lottery money because they've decided that sheep are works of art.
Nobody cares, Francis. Nobody gives a sheep.
Alan, do you have the answer to this question?
Well, I think it might be the Church of England that doesn't want Prince Charles to be its king. Well, he doesn't want it to be its head of the Church of England. David is panting here to take the footnote from me. David, tell me, out of four people don't want him.
No, I think the reason is, firstly, apparently he's not homosexual. And the second problem is he apparently believes in God or deity. The Lord's Land Apostle, they think that this is rather retro.
Jeremy, how are police marksmen wide of the mark?
Apparently, somebody did an investigation into the police and found that they're not very good at shooting, and thank God for that. Because they do shoot an enormous number of... I mean, for an unarmed police force, they seem to shoot an enormous number of people.
One of them managed to shoot himself in the knee, and I was trying to work out, if you're a police marksman, how you could shoot yourself in the knee while aiming at an armed robber. But it can be done, apparently, because somebody did.
Well, if you're kneeing him in the bollocks at the same time.
There's a report from the Royal Ulster Constabulary which showed that only one-third of shots fired by police in confrontations hit their intended targets. The other two-thirds hit Protestants. In training, the police fire at a dummy. Even though they didn't hit it very often, at least the dummy finally confessed to three armed robberies and a parking offence. They've now brought in a performance-related incentive scheme. Any officer who shoots an armed robber now wins a goldfish. David, listen to this. The theme from An Officer and a Gentleman. Who was overpaid, oversexed, and over someone she shouldn't have been?
This is the story, is it not, of the American first woman pilot of B-52s. Remember, the B-52s, that bloody great bomber that won the Vietnam War for the Americans. And she's the first woman pilot of B-52s, and she had an affair with a soccer coach or somebody like that, some sporting man or other, and because this was, he was already married, although she didn't know it at the time, this was considered to be adulterous, and Colonel Jack Straw or somebody like that from the American Air Force decided that this was extremely bad news and that she was therefore not moral enough to go off and bomb villages full of children and women and better be dismissed or suspended from the American Air Force.
Yeah, it comes to something when the pilot of a B-52 is accused of breaking up the happy home, doesn't it?
Another female officer who had an illegitimate baby also awaits a court-martial. Charges were brought after she insisted on breastfeeding during a long flight, even though the rest of the crew said it made a great change from their usual in-flight rations. Alan, who crossed his fingers, then hoped to die?
He has been hinted at earlier. It's our great colleague, Tony Banks, regularly appeared on the news quiz, and whom one knows socially, and who feels that it's not his fingers he ought to keep crossed. But there we are. He's an extremely nice man, and a great minister for football, soccer, and all that stuff. And he took the oath in the House of Commons with his fingers crossed to show that he said to show that he. He'd always dreamed of being in the job and was terrified he would wake up and find it was all a dream. And
the new Minister for Sport, Tony Banks, outraged monarchists by crossing his fingers while being sworn in. People took this to mean that he was being less than sincere, in which case it was a terrible breach of parliamentary protocol. Normally when MPs are fibbing their heads off, they put their hands on their hearts. He described himself as a naturally superstitious person and now has an uncanny premonition that Tony Blair is planning his first ministerial reshuffle. And the score's at the end of round two. Francis and Jeremy 7, but Alan and David in the lead with 10 points. We start round three with a cutting from the Dorset Evening Echo.
A Weymouth man who drove a car with virtually no brakes has been banned from driving for a year. Robert Brooks, 27, of Commercial Road, denied the offence and won charge of failing to stop when requested by police.
Thanks to Simon Hum of Weymouth for sending that in. Francis, who are yogically flying the nest?
It's the Natural Law Party, otherwise known as the Maharishi, who has been sitting at Mentmore Towers, it is, for about the last 25 years, and he's now selling it. It's a fantastic bit of property speculation. They bought it, I will remember, it was a great scandal in the 70s. He bought it for about 3 and 6 months, and they've now put it on the market for about 15 million, 20 million, something like that, because they've been doing all this yogic flying there, which has added to the value. You see their wonderful party launch during the election, where every election without fail, they say, if only you all do yogic flying, then this country will be a happier place. And then people bounce about on their bottoms. And they say, look, they're flying. And everyone says, no, they're not. They're just jumping up and down on their bottoms. But it's all to do with George Harrison and Mumbo Jumbo and... I don't understand a word of it, but all I know is it's bubbling bliss. That's what they said in their manifesto. That's why I voted for them. They said, if you elect us, we will promise you bubbling bliss every day. And I thought, fair enough.
Yes, the Maharishi Foundation, pioneers of transcendental meditation, are selling their headquarters Mentmore Towers for £15 million. And the stage agent described it as being totally impractical for modern living and essentially a bit of a folly. But he was asked to keep his opinions about the foundation to himself and concentrate on selling the building. The sale comes in the wake of the election defeat of the Natural Law Party. So we can expect Conservative Central Office on the market in a couple of weeks. Jeremy, listen to this. Jeremy, how are germs facing a clean sweep across the chopping board?
Chopping boards, yes. This will be the antibacterial chopping board, which cleans as it sweeps, as it chops, as it dices. as you cut things up, it releases an antibacterial thing, so you can gargle with it if you've got a sore throat. Because everyone's obsessed with food hygiene now, and it just wasn't an issue when I was a boy. I mean, there were things around the house, leftovers, you know, for weeks on end. I mean, my parents cooked a joint of lamb in 1953, and they've been living off it ever since. But suddenly everyone's, you know, worried about it. So that's what it is, isn't it?
Yes, indeed, yes. It's a chopping board called Microban, which destroys mould, mildew, and can kill a camembert at 10 paces. It destroys the microbes that cause dysentery, pneumonia, tetanus, and tuberculosis, which is certainly going to take the fun out of a trip to your local kebab takeaway. It will be a huge boon for health-conscious housewives. They can be sure of a totally germ-free environment in which to prepare the BSE-laden Sunday roast. David, what has picked up a bug down under?
What has picked up a bug down under?
You want to know about penguins?
I tell you, why don't you tell me a bit about penguins?
Penguins are suffering from chopping board disease. Penguins are contracting things and dying. I don't know. I didn't like that down under joke much because a penguin hasn't got much down under. There's just his feet and the ice. I don't know. I've never known where penguins keep their genitalia, probably behind their ear. Simon will know that. But anyway, penguins in the Antarctic are falling over. It looks like must be very strange. It must look like a waiter's massacre. If you fly over there, there's all these things in dinner jackets lying flat on ice floes. But they're dying of some terrible disease. Did you not know that, David?
No.
Do you not care?
I do care about...
I haven't seen a tear yet.
No, did you know about penguins that their way of dealing with sharks, of finding out the sharks, is very similar to the way in which the Tories elect new leaders after election defeats. What happens is they all crowd up to the edge until finally one falls in. And if it comes up again, there are no sharks and they all go in. If it doesn't, just blood comes up, then they all waddle back.
There you go.
Prove that.
No.
It's the news that penguins in Antarctica have contracted a virus from infected chicken dinners. This is just one more bad effect that growing tourism has had on Antarctica. Alien viruses, buildings, air pollution, and soon the inevitable horror of a visit by Judith Chalmers. Tourists wishing to visit Antarctica are recommended to stay at home and watch Channel 5. They'll save money and see as much snowy wasteland as they want. Alan, who took the opportunity to knock out a bit of How's Your Father?
Oh, dear. I'm afraid this one is fraught with pitfalls of litigation and punning. It isn't only opportunity that knocks. He also had this programme, I remember, which had a 60-second yes-no interlude, which was as long as you got to say yes or no. I don't know whether it applied in his case. It is alleged that Huey Green is the father of Paula Yates. Jess Yates is not her father at all. How anyone can conjoin the three names of Huey Green, Jess Yates and Paula Yates and believe they were up to no good is beyond me. But that's what they've done. At Huey Green's memorial service, I think, somebody blurted out the fact that he had a daughter who was a great personality. For some reason, people concluded this must be Paula Yates. But I don't think anyone else has said anything about it.
The scores at the end of round three are Francis and Jeremy 11, but Alan and David still in the lead with 13 points. Before we start the final round, here's a cutting from the Stornoway Gazette, sent in by Flora van der Berg of Leeds.
Photographer John McLean took advantage of a clear night to get this image of the comet Hale-Bopp last month. The comet has been visible to the naked since January.
Francis your piece of music.
So come on, let me be, let me be bread and butter man. Say I do, say I do. Give me your loving hand.
Francis, how did Americans give British cuisine a kick up the butty?
Americans don't like British food, I deduce, and infer from this. Not very keen on chip butties. My colleague here is going...
silent H, sandwiches.
But Americans don't like British food, because they like sandwiches, because they say it's junk food, and they don't go in for that sort of thing over there. they'd rather settle down to an Egg McMuffin.
No, it wasn't that.
Jeremy Dewey.
Sandwiches. Ooh, Americans said that... Our sandwich is a cack. Even though we invented them, because as everybody knows, the Duke of Cardigan one day said, put this piece of beef between two Wellington boots and make it into a jumper that buttons up the front. And that's how Spinning Jenny invented steam.
Wall Street Journal launched a stinging attack on the Great British Sandwich, which they said was no match for an American sandwich, or as we would call it over here, the main meal of the day for a family of four. Defence for the British sandwich immediately came from many quarters. The Duchess of York said she always made sandwiches for her business meetings. There's nothing she likes more than spreading them for her financial advisers.
Oh,
Jeremy, how are chocoholics scenting a breakthrough?
Patches. If you sniff certain things, you lose your appetite. Amphetamine sulfate, vomit, pot noodle. And this woman has invented a thing that you sniff that stops you eating chocolate, because she knew this because she ran a restaurant and she found that the chefs there never wanted to eat the food that they'd cooked because it was a harvester. I love the way they say, have you been to a harvester before? As if you'd make the mistake twice. Oh, yes, it's a weekly event for us. We can't get enough of the stuff. But I don't know, it probably wasn't there. But that's the point, that if you smell certain things, you don't want to eat.
Yes, the aroma patches are said to stop people eating chocolate. It's based on the theory of aromacology, which states that being surrounded by an unusual smell helps you eat less, mainly because nobody ever invites you round for dinner. Patches smell like plasticine. One user said they've cut down her craving for chocolate, but she spends all the money she saved on Wallace and Gromit videos. David, how might human error be shown the red card?
Is this a question about John Redwood, otherwise known as Deep Blue, the computer who can defeat human beings in open combat over things like chess and Tory party leaderships? I was hoping that gave Alan enough time to work it out. I don't know why.
Absolutely no idea.
So, professor at the University of Manchester Institute of Science and Technology, I'm catching up now, who wants football referees to wear huge Air Force-type helmets, like tornado pilots, full of computers and things, so that they can judge when something's offside by examining the replay on the screen, on the visor of their helmet. And they'll run around not actually seeing anything that's happening on the pitch, but watching a sort of virtual reality version of it. And it'll cut out the need for Jimmy Hill, for which we're all very grateful.
Yes, it is. It's a proposal to create a so-called robo-ref to eliminate refereeing mistakes at football matches. One of the plans is for the referee to wear a special headset with a built-in TV screen to allow him to watch instant replays. There was a serious setback when, during an Arsenal game, the referee kept turning over to see if there was something more interesting on the other channel. Alan, who drove himself sick with a lick?
There's another horrible... If you go... I hate those witless people that play golf. I mean, no, I don't really. At least not those that can write in. But if you go... if you go into golf professional shops, it's full of the worst jokes in the world. about golfers and balls. And you see that one that says, good golfers always lick their balls. And people buy these and give them to their friends, and they all fall about and laugh at these wonderful sort of Masonic humorous fashion. But it turns out to be true that if you do actually lick your golf balls, you will get hepatitis. I don't know why that news brought a smile to my face, but apparently a golfer fell over on the 17th thing and was rushed off to hospital. They couldn't find out what was wrong with him. And probably because most of the doctors were off playing golf. But there was one machine still operating and said, you've got hepatitis, and we think you've got it by licking a golf ball.
If you can get hepatitis off a golf ball because...
Why would you bother getting it any other way? I know.
People are strange.
Simply because it's been rolling across a golf green because they've been putting pesticide on it. This is where, I mean, I can see Jeremy beginning to get very ecological over here about all this. Doesn't that mean that the rest of us can be getting absolutely appalling diseases because of...
Well, it depends what you lick, Sunshine. I mean...
Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
Yes, Simon. This is from an interview with Roger Cook, television's answer to John Prescott, that great big bruiser who does the Cook Report, and it's from You magazine, which comes with the Mail on Sunday. The interviewer says, and you've received anonymous death threats too, haven't you? And Cook says, yes, I had a very matter-of-fact secretary who said, there's a man on the phone who wants to kill you. Shall I put him through? Sure enough, this man with an Ulster accent started saying that I wouldn't live to see the end of the series, but then he was cut off. He called back later and apologetically explained that he'd run out of change. Then he finished making his death threat.
Jeremy.
This was sent in by a listener called Mike Smith, who claims to have heard this on the afternoon shift. In an article about a house made entirely of glass, the owner stated that the most common question she is asked is whether people can see from outside when she is on the lavatory. She explained that because the glass distorts and the house is fitted with blinds, people outside could not see her movements.
David.
This is from the Sheffield Star, and this is about the sad tale of Sheffield council estate tenants who are waking up to discover teenagers making love in their gardens. And they have complained to the police, and at a meeting, an Inspector Graham Wright of Sheffield Police told the assembled people that people having sex in one's garden must be very distressing, but if someone is having an ongoing burglary, we have to prioritise calls. We have to make a choice between catching a burglar or catching someone having sex in a garden. That is the stark reality, he added.
The difference between breaking and entering, I suppose.
Alan.
I have rather a sad little gobbit from the Express on Sunday, Simon. He's a spokesman for Madame Tussauds, said that the decision over whether to store John Major's effigy or recycle it had not yet been taken. It's still something of a grey area, he said.
Thank you all, and now let's look at the final scores. Alan and David, 15, but Francis and Jeremy caught up brilliantly to end with 15. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from The Scotsman, sent in by Leslie Clare of East Lothian.
A company trying to... goggles on the job. The film's depiction of gory industrial accidents was so graphic that 25 workers suffered minor injuries in their rush to leave the screening room. 13 others fainted, and one man required 7 stitches after he cut his head falling off a chair while watching the film.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Curran, Francis Wien, David Aronovich and Jeremy Hardy. The chairman was Simon Hoggart, and the news was read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chairman's script was written by Ian Pattinson, with Hugh Rycroft and David Spicer. The producer was Alan Evans.